misses free and affordable ads and social networks without the anti-sex work rhetoric? Assembly 4 is a team of sex workers and technologists in Melbourne, Australia, aiming to bring back free and fair advertising and social spaces to the sex working community. They also give back to organizations based in harm reduction, sex work, and education. Stepping away from the clunky design of traditional platforms, their two products, Tryst.link and Switter.at, are refreshing and well-needed changes in both presentation and mission. Both are free to join and open to all. In the words of an A4 user, from the policies to the language to the advice and tips, it makes such a big difference to feel encouraged and supported instead of policed. Check out their website, assembly4.com, for the word and not the number, for more info. Welcome to the Peep Show Podcast.
News and stories from the sex industry.
With Jesse and PJ Sage. Welcome back to another episode of the Peep Show Podcast. This is a special episode on sex work and therapy where Annie Solomon and I pull snippets of the interviews we did for our recent Pulp article on the same topic. Interviews include Femi Babylon, Jet Setting Jasmine, Alan the Sex Chaplain, Mistress Blunt, and Emily Warfield. Is there enough kink and flirtation in your life right now? Aorta Films creates lusty, opulent, glorious fuckery. Their films are full of beautifully shot, super hot queer porn featuring a large range of bodies, identities, kinks, and dynamics. This month, check out Aorta's newest release, Hard at Work, featuring Indigo and Zay Royale. Working from home has its perks, so when Zay Royale finds Indigo working overtime, they decide to take matters, and Indigo's dick, into their own hands. Shot during the pandemic, this at-home short featuring IRL partners buzzes with electric, intimate energy. $9 a month on Patreon gets you full access to Aorta's library of 60-plus short and featured films, with a new film released on the first of each month. Or back them at the $17 a month level, and you get a download of that month's film delivered straight to your inbox.
Hey, I'm Adrian, one of the hosts of After Adult Podcast. My porn name should be Mozart Fremont, but you probably know me better by my actual porn name, Siri.
I'm Rachel, but my porn name would be Woody 16th Avenue.
After Adult is a podcast about life and porn.
I don't actually watch porn.
I don't really watch that much porn either. I probably watch more than you, but I mean, most of the time it kind of would feel like going to work on my day off.
You 100% watch more than me because I don't watch porn. Find us wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for After Adult.
Or visit afteradult.com and follow us on Instagram at After Adult.
Hi, this is Jesse Sage from the Peep Show Podcast, and I have been working with Annie Solomon on a paper recently, and she's here with me today. So hi, Annie.
Hi.
Annie is graduating from college this year, and she is working with Peep Show Podcast. So it's been very fun to have her as part of the team this semester.
Yes, I've been learning so much, and being immersed in this has been amazing.
Annie and I together have been interviewing sex workers and therapists and sex working therapists about what sex workers need from therapy, which was kind of lines up with Annie's work that she's doing in college. So Annie, do you want to talk a little bit about why you were interested in this project?
Yeah, so I am a psychology and gender sexualities and women's studies double major. So I feel like this perfectly aligns both of my interests, because I in the future would like to go into counseling or therapy, if that's in the cards. Mm-hmm. So this is sort of like the perfect mesh between that, and has really like made me understand like how much work that I need to do on a personal level in like educating myself about marginalized communities across the board before I even get into this kind of work. But then when I was observing the Peep Show Live disability panel, there was so much in there about like therapy and access and all of that, like all of those intersecting identities and what that means when it comes to accessing adequate care. And so I feel like that really opened up like a whole can of worms.
Yeah.
Just like all of this interesting stuff that I really wanted to know more about.
Yeah. And do you feel like interviewing the people that we interviewed gave you a lot more insight into that?
Oh my gosh. Yes, for sure. I didn't understand like how much really that therapy or mental health care in general was just lacking when it came to like sex workers, especially, but just like everybody, like across the board. Like if you're not like white, cis, straight, middle class, at least, like
right, living really in a hard metropolitan area too, right, is one of the things that I was picking up on from.
Yeah,
it's also like geographical,
right? And so it just made me realize that like even in a healthcare environment, like there's so much work that needs to be done.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and look. So we interviewed for the article that we co-wrote five different people coming from kind of different perspectives. We have a couple of dominatrices. We have some sex workers. We have a chaplain who runs the swap line, which was also super interesting. So not a sex worker, but somebody who answers swap hotline calls, which swap is a sex worker outreach project. So sex workers in crisis. We want to bring in part of the interview that we did with Emily Warfield, because going back to what Annie was talking about in terms of a lack of access, Emily is actually working, finishing a master's degree in social work, is in policy, does a ton of work around access and healthcare, obviously, but is having her own problems since she's a dominatrix trying to get the care that she needs. So let's start there.
They matched me with someone who said she has experience in trauma. I had an initial session with her, and she seemed kind of nervous. And like, I could sort of see on her face that she was like trying to, she was a social worker, and she was like trying to remember, you know, what had she been taught about sexual diversity, and like, how could she present as accepting? Mm-hmm. Like, I could see the gears turning. And I said, like, this is not the thing I want to work on, but just so you're aware, I'm a dominatrix. And, you know, as long as you're open to having me explain to you what that means to me, like, I think we'll be fine. I got an email from her afterwards that was just like, I'm sorry, but like, I feel like I'm not the best match for you. You know, on one hand, it's like, well, it's good that she's not trying to, you know, do something that she's not qualified for. But on the other hand, it's like, probably nobody really is qualified, you know, like very few clinicians are competent in that area. And I do consider it a form of like cultural competency or cultural humility to be versed in like sex work and all of the various experiences that people in the sex trades have. And I feel like that is something that is just not being taught.
Yeah. So, I mean, listening to her story, I think, is really important. And I think not the only sex worker who's dealt with that. And the thing that I think is frustrating about this is that one of the things she's saying is like, actually, this therapist doesn't even necessarily have to be competent in sex work issues. Like, she's basically like, I'm not here for that. I'm here for trauma. You do specialize in trauma. But just know that I may bring up my work sometime. And just that by itself was like enough.
Yeah. And I feel like that's like when I listened to that, it was so disheartening to hear. Mm-hmm. And like, it's like, sure, it's great the therapist was honest about like their limitations, but it's like, where do sex workers receive care then? Like, like you said, if she's going for trauma, where should she receive that care?
Right.
And I do agree with Emily when she says it's a form of cultural competency, because it is. Like, it's clear that even a base level of understanding is lacking for most mental health care providers. And like, this is for an entire community of people.
Right. Right. Yeah. And, you know, she brings up the fact that then like, well, where are they getting this from? Like, yeah, how is anyone going to gain this competency? And also, I mean, this seems like a compounding problem, because a lot of times, like, the therapist who are, you know, the most versed in a particular issue or a particular marginalization is somebody who's experienced that themselves, you know, and by and large, like, in educational systems, sex workers are often, like, so marginalized and pushed out that they're not, they don't have access to a lot of that. So where are sex workers going to find this? I mean, one of the people that we interviewed that did this sort of work in terms of like teaching med students and therapists is Danielle Blunt, Mistress Blunt, who's a dominatrix, but who also worked with Persist Healthcare. And she talked to us a little bit about that work so we can turn to that now.
Some of the work that I did with Persist Health Project, which it was a nonprofit that helped sex workers access non-judgmental health services, was vetting healthcare providers to make sure that they were sex worker competent, as well as giving trainings to mental health professionals and doctors to sort of fill in the gaps of what they were learning, which was nothing. in med school about that sounded way more condescending than I intended, but just
no, it's true though.
Yeah, I remember giving a workshop to like third year med students, and they were like, thank you so much, this is the first time we've talked about sex in this degree.
Oh my god,
let alone labor. Yeah, definitely filling in some of those gaps. So I think because of that, most of my experiences with therapy and disclosing my work as a sex worker have been positive. But before that was sort of what made me interested in doing the work, which it wasn't like a net negative experience with therapy, but it was more so just having to explain what sex work was, what BDSM was to a mental health provider. Mm-hmm. And that really should be paid labor on my part of I was at that point in time providing her with a service that should have been compensated, and like that's not how I want to spend my money explaining the realities of my life and my work experience to someone.
It's so like amazing to me listening to Blunt, knowing that there's like third year medical students who aren't told at all how to talk to, I mean, I know medical students aren't therapists, but it's the same like sort of problem, which is a much broader problem, which is that practitioners aren't being taught how to talk to their patients about sex.
Right. And I feel like obviously like our socialization teaches us and embeds us with so much stigma towards sex workers. Mm-hmm. But then if you're going into like a care profession, like even just like being a like a medical doctor or like a therapist, like they're not unlearning that through their field. Like it's becoming further embedded within them, and they can't, like there's no resources for them to sort of get out of that unless they seek it on their own. Like I feel like it should be a part of the curriculum to unlearn those biases and stigma, but it's just not. Like I don't understand how that just doesn't get taught.
Yeah, right. Because it should be. And like going back to what you were saying, like picking up on Emily, we should expect that from our providers. We should expect them to be able to talk to sex workers about the issues that they're having and talk to them, you know. And when I say that, when I say talk to sex workers about the issues that they're having, I mean anything, not necessarily issues with sex work. And that's been, you know, one of the problems that a lot of the people that we interviewed brought up, which is that, you know, they don't necessarily always want to talk about sex work. They want to talk about other things too, but that becomes more difficult once you have like a stigmatized identity and once the people that you're working with are viewing you through the lens of stigma.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating to hear that like people have such a low bar for the care that they provide. Like coming from a therapist, like I feel like that is such a low bar for them to be like, oh well, then I'm not just not gonna do the work to educate myself. Or I'm not going to do the work to like sit here and like even learn about it from you or pay you for your expertise, like Blunt was saying. Like, I'm just going to sit here and let my client educate me so that I can provide them with care. Like, I feel like that relationship, that should not be happening there. You
know? Yeah, that's totally upside down. Yeah. you know, so one of the things that Emily talked a lot about, the fact that like what she was looking for when she was looking for somebody was somebody who was LGBTQ friendly. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason for that, she says, is that people who have LGBTQ like competency tend to also be more open to sex workers. Mm-hmm. So let's hear her talk about that.
I don't really identify as queer. I have had sexual relationships with women. I guess I'm more like heteroflexible, but I put like LGBT issues as a big thing because people who are trained in that often have more experience in sex work.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like before we interviewed people, I actually didn't think that much about that, except that I realized that when I picked my, I thought back to my own experience. And when I picked my therapist, who I've been with for like 6 years, I looked at a bunch of pictures on like Psychology Today, and she had kind of a like an asymmetrical haircut. And I was like, she looks kind of queer. Like, I think that'll work. And so there was something in my head that I wasn't like totally making a connection, but I was like, well, she looks like a queer woman. So I think this will work out just fine.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Because I feel like sex work is kind of queer in the sense that it's not like normative, but it's not queer in the sense of like not straight. You know, like all the times it's not completely heteronormative or heterosexual. And I feel like for that reason, there's so many differences between like being queer and being a sex worker. So like, I get why people would seek that out if they're a sex worker, like seeking out a queer friendly therapist.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, there are overlaps, but there are so many queer people who aren't sex workers. And there are so many like queer people who are. So I feel like there is a difference. And I feel like sex worker competency should not be limited to queer friendly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you can't fully comprehend either one if you approach it like it's the same thing, you know?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I mean, it is the case that like sex worker, that sex work communities and sex work itself is overrepresented by queer people. You know, there's a theorist named Jane Ward who talked about heterosexuality as being the like fetishization of the normal. So it's like much less about who you're attracted to and much more about like upholding like the status quo. And if we're going to think about like queerness as like turning against the status quo, then like sex workers are inherently like queer in a way. But like what Emily was saying is like, I think also really valuable, which is like in my own personal like proclivities or my own like sex life, like I don't actually identify as queer. I just happen to be a sex worker. And so I mean, I think the point you're making is like really important, which is like you can't just assume that people who can understand or who are used to dealing with like folks who identify as queer necessarily understand like the complexities of sex work.
Right. Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because Femi Babylon, who is a sex worker based in Chicago, who also works with SWAP, the Sex Worker Outreach Project, talked about her own like positive experiences with a therapist in the same light. So let's listen to her.
When I was living in Memphis in 2017, I was seeing a therapist. It was a Black woman, a recommendation from a queer Black friend. They had owned a practice together, and that friend ended up moving to DC, starting a practice there. What the thing that definitely worked for me is that like this friend that was in Memphis, you know, I didn't experience any of the classes that I normally experience. She's very queer, LGBTQ friendly, you know, and thus was very sex worker friendly. That tends to be the case, that if I want someone who's sex worker friendly, then they have to be, they have to overtly say that they are LGBTQ friendly. Then I know, you know, then I know where I stand. With other therapists, it's like, even if I kind of edged around to like having done sex work in the past, you know, it was like a thing.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting to hear her say that now, like after hearing, like after thinking about it in the conversation that we just had, which is that I think that services are lacking so much that we have like kind of a low bar.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that kind of came across in what Femi was saying. I mean, she wasn't saying like that there was anything like wrong with her therapist, but, you know, as just like an initial starting point, being like, can I talk to you about my non-normative sexual habits? Is that even like on the table? And she used the words like, where do I stand in this? And I think that that's kind of powerful.
Again, I think that they should be different things, but I understand that like, if you want to talk about, like you said, non-normative sexual experiences, like sex work is that, and also like being a queer person is that. So it does make sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason I think that both of us were interested in this project is like, we hope it for a future in which like there are also therapists who are sex work competent and not just LGBTQ competent. So we also talked to Jet Setting Jasmine. She, in her therapy life, goes by Jasmine Johnson. She's a psychotherapist, but she is also a sex worker. And much of the work that she does is with sex working clients, because there is this sort of lack, and she knows as a sex worker how, like, what sort of issues sex workers have. And she talked to us a lot about the reasons why therapists who aren't very culturally competent in sex work tend to not provide sex workers with the type of services that they need.
And oftentimes therapists that are not informed, they're not either kink informed, sex work informed, trauma informed, all the things, they get into the weeds of the details of our work because either they need to touch their nose, they're just being nosy, or they're unable to make that separation between, regardless of the setting, this is what the feelings were, this is where our challenge, and this is where we would like to go.
Sex work becomes like the focal point for a lot of therapists.
Mm-hmm. I also feel like everybody was saying that, like, therapists, like most therapists, are unable to make that separation of, like, the specifics of, like, okay, what do you do? Mm-hmm. Like, just teach me basically what you do from the ways that it affects the client. And I feel like that should be paramount. Like, you shouldn't be like, oh, now tell me exactly what you do or what that means. Like, give me the 101. Like, you should, like, even if you don't understand that, you should be able to separate that and like make the session actually about your client and like reacting to their experiences and their feelings.
Right. I mean, I don't know anything about being working on the stock market floor or whatever, but like, you know, I have no idea about that. But I think if I was a therapist who had a client who was in, like, who did that, that it would be my job to talk to them about, like, well, what does that look like for you? Is that, like, stressful? How do you manage that? And not, like, the nitpicky details of, like, what time they get there and who they talk to. And, like,
exactly. Like, you can react to, like, say, like, again, stock market example. Like, if they have anxiety in that situation or something like that, you would want to talk about that more than the actual work because, like, I'm not financially brained at all. Like, I do not understand those terms. I would not even I wouldn't even be able to sit there and learn from them at that point. But I feel like you should be reacting to the feelings and the experience and trying to help them, like, cope with whatever they're going through rather than their job.
Right. And not say, like, oh, and this, I think, is a lot another thing that a lot of sex workers that we talk to and a lot of sex workers that I know have also experienced, which is, like, you don't have therapists who are like, oh, well, you think it's stressful to be on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange? Well, then maybe you should do something else, you know, which is like
no one's going to tell somebody who works, like, a non-sex working job to just quit their job because they find it stressful.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's not a thing. So why is that a thing for sex workers? I don't understand that.
Yeah, right. As if, like, it's totally possible to just, whenever you feel like it, quit your job.
I know. Seriously.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I want to go to Alan now because Alan, who coordinates the SWAP hotline, talked a little bit about this.
I will always say it's the stigmatization. And so many sex workers have said that once they tell someone they're a sex worker, they don't know what the reaction will be. The, like, is it, because even the most professionals, like doctors and nurses or whoever, therapists, will start to focus in on that instead of anything else. It's like all of a sudden, and I don't know if it's because of our kind of Puritan thing in the United States. You know, people were saying, you know, I had a friend that I trusted and confided all my stuff in. But when I started to confide that I was a sex worker, and kind of go over, like, the difficulties I was having with, let's say, a client or, you know, a company that I might be working with, that was never the focus. The focus was like, oh, so, like, how much money do you make? So how can you do that? So what happened to you in life to make you this way? You know, like, even a therapist would just solely focus. Somebody could be going to a therapist for a completely separate thing, but want to be upfront with them about, yeah, this is my daily life. This is what I do. And, but right now I have such agoraphobia and panic attacks, and to be like, okay, well, let's focus on this sex work that you talked mm-hmm. about. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't think that's the root of things. I mean, we could talk about things, but...
Yeah, so I mean, he talks pretty specifically about sex workers who feel like as soon as they reveal that they're a sex worker, like all of their interactions become mm-hmm. about like that revelation.
Yeah.
Which I mean, I have that experience too. I've had that in a lot of my like interactions, even with like well-meaning people who suddenly, like if you're at a social event, they're like, this is, you know, my friend Jessie, she's a sex worker. And I'm like, what? That's not even how I know you. You know, and
like,
so
why is that the first thing that comes to mind?
Like, yeah, it becomes like for people who are outside of the sex industry, it becomes the master thing that they identify somebody, they identify a sex worker with. And I mean, that's a lot about like stigma. So like stigma theorist Goffman, like to be a little bit heady, like talked about the fact that one of the characteristics of stigma is that it reduces the person to that thing, mm-hmm. you know? So if you have some sort of like handicap, that becomes like the lens through which people see you. If you're, you know, if you have any sort of marginalized identity, that's what ends up happening. And
And I feel like it's like even more messed up when that happens, like in a healthcare mm-hmm, setting, mm-hmm. because like, yeah, we talked about like how that's lacking on an educational level. But I feel like if you aren't working on an individual level to like undo that stigma,
right,
then you're not really providing like care for every person, because you just like you just see them as like a sex worker or like just as handicapped, like you were saying.
Yeah,
so it's like mm-hmm. I feel like that is a barrier to care. And if you aren't there to provide care for every person and see them as individual people, then I don't think you should be providing that care at all.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Any other service, like if it's not inclusive or adequate, then you need to work harder. Like if you're approaching mental health care with like any sort of bias, then you need to work hard to undo it, or at least be aware of it,
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
people's lives are on the line, especially with like mental health care. Like,
yeah,
anything you say could affect your client.
Yeah, absolutely. Alan actually goes on to talk a little bit more about this, the way in which like sex work becomes reductionist.
First thing is to come at the angle of their sex worker as being work, that it may be relevant to what they're going through, but it may not. The people that I've talked to who were upset with therapists was the therapist would focus solely on that, not on mm-hmm. anything else. And kind of try to solve that for them. You know, well, let's see how you can not be a sex worker. And instead of, you know, focusing on the anxiety or the depression or the bipolar or whatever they're going through. So I think that's the biggest thing, is to not solely focus on that. I mean, it's okay to holistically, you know, consider that as part of what someone's going through mental health wise. But at the same time, just focusing solely on that is not going to really get rid of a lot of the issues that people have, because it may or may not be related to it. And if it is, maybe they need coping mechanisms, because maybe there isn't an easy way to divest from that. You know, people are like, just find a job. I'm like, okay. And also, right. I was homeless before and sex work helped me to get my own place. And I'm afraid to... you know, take a job where I'm going to make less money and not be able to afford the place and then be back out.
So that goes back to what we were talking about earlier,
mm-hmm.
Where, you know, like sex work is not the issue. Just like accounting or being a laborer in any other field is not the problem. And it's like really clear that when people discuss like, oh, you should just quit, like the pressure to quit sex work comes from a place of holding so much stigma about it mm-hmm. and not really understanding it as labor.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the things I think that gets like confused is that there are a lot of people in sex work with disabilities, with mental health issues, with a whole house insecurity, with all kinds of other sorts of issues. But it's not, I think that a lot of people who don't understand a lot about sex work believe that it's like because they're doing sex work that they have like these sorts of issues.
Right.
But honestly, like what in, you know, in my work and talking to like hundreds and hundreds of sex workers, and being a sex worker and being a sex worker with a child with a disability, like, I think that one of the things that is like a common thread among a lot of sex workers is, for whatever reason, because of my mental health issues or because of a disability or because of the disabilities of my kids or other caretaking responsibilities, it's really hard for me to hold a full-time job. Like, mm-hmm. sex work then becomes a place where people can be independent right. when conventional employment fails them. And so to look at populations of sex workers and be like, this is obviously a problem. Sex work is obviously a problem because you have these other sorts of issues is like actually completely like backward.
Right.
Which isn't to say that like nobody struggles in sex work or any of that, but it's to say that it's like a much more complicated picture.
Right.
Going back to Blunt, who we heard from a little bit earlier, one of the things that she says as a response to this is that like, the biggest thing that like therapists can do is like not actually push this sort of like Alan was talking about therapists who are pushing sex workers to divest from sex mm-hmm. work or pushing, you know, an agenda. Blunt talks about the fact that that's actually counterproductive to right. care.
I think that when a therapist focuses, like truly focuses on what a client wants to talk about, there's so much more room to build that relationship and build trust in that relationship and to really grow into that relationship than when a therapist or healthcare professional is pushing like a personal ideology.
Being able to meet like sex working clients where they are and not assume that you have the answer to what their problems are or like how to approach them is mm-hmm. like opens up space for so much more.
Right. When she says personal ideology, like that just goes back and circles back to everything that like healthcare should not be impeded by personal biases mm-hmm. or ideologies.
Right.
And like I was explained to me one time, if you say you're a professional, like a hair professional or something, mm-hmm. but you can't care for natural hair or black hair, then you really aren't a professional.
Yeah.
And I feel like the same is true for other types of labor and especially healthcare. Like if you are not trained in certain populations, then mm-hmm. you're not really a professional. You're right. just like catering to the norm.
Yeah, right. And I think that that's the problem with like so much of our care is that it's trying to push people into like very particular boxes. And if people are outside of those norms, then like providers don't know how to care for them.
Right. And I feel like it does so much more harm than good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So another thing I think that is really important is, and I think comes out of what all of, what everybody's been saying so far, is that the problem with therapists looking at their clients through like the lens of stigma or through their own like personal ideology is that it kind of flattens sex work and it flattens mm-hmm. like sex workers' like ability to talk about like their work with
right.
with nuance, you know, and mm-hmm. and talk about the fact that they may have complicated feelings about their work. So you can have yeah. complicated feelings about your work, but not necessarily want to leave it.
right.
Or you could also feel on the other end of things that like you don't feel particularly attached to your work, but you don't, you know, it's the best of all possible options.
And I feel like that's what Emily and Blunt talk about, too, a lot.
Yeah, let's listen to what Emily has to say about that.
I do see a lot of therapists who call themselves sex positive, which is cool. But that doesn't necessarily tell me that they're open-minded about sex work. Because I yeah. also don't mm-hmm. want to go to a therapist and have them be like, wow, that sounds really empowering for you, when for me, it's not. There's probably some opposite issues have not nearly as often, but I do think there's maybe some opposite issues happening of like, oh, we have to always consider this like a cool, fun, empowered thing. And it's like, no, for a lot of people, it's just work. And for other like people, some people do experience it as violence, and to be able to work with the whole spectrum of experiences and really, mm-hmm. again, just allowing people to define that for themselves.
Yeah. So it's interesting to hear Emily talk, because one of the things that a lot of people were saying, you know, at the beginning is like, I don't want sex workers to read something, or I don't want therapists rather to read something like super negative into my work. But I think that it could go the other way. And that's kind of what she's suggesting as well.
Yeah. Like, not a lot of people like love their jobs or like feel empowered by their jobs. Mm-hmm. So like for most people, it's just something that pays the bills. Like we're all laborers under capitalism.
Right.
And that is the same for sex work. I mean, like it's different because the commodity is sex and intimacy, but it's still labor. It should be thought of as such. And approaching therapy with this empowerment lens limits the openness, I think, that a provider has to actually taking into account those complex feelings about work.
Hello, this is Chelsea Poe from TroubleFilms.com. I'm here to tell you about getting access to hot BDSM, queer, trans, and dyke porn all in one place. With code PEEPSHOW21, you can get 21% off your next order from TroubleFilms.com. Again, that's code PEEPSHOW21, TroubleFilms.com.
From the very first clip that we listened to of Emily, one of the things that Emily was saying is, you know, when she went to her therapist, the one that turned her away, she said, like, if you're willing to hear what that means to me and not like what you think about it, whether you think it's empowering or whether you think it's like something that only people who are destitute do or whatever. In between, like not listening to how the person who's doing that work is like understanding it for themselves is actually a bigger problem.
Yeah. And I think Blunt also discusses this, like the complexity of feelings too.
Yeah, let's turn to her.
I think sex work is something that a lot of mental health care providers don't really have experience navigating the complexities of what their clients might be going through, and the fact that you can hold complicated feelings about your work, both the work that you've done previously, the work that you're about to do in the future, and you can hold like overlapping complicated feelings about that work at the same time, and being able to hold space for people's complicated lived experiences around work without passing judgment.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like in listening to that, I'm thinking like, isn't that what therapists are supposed to do with everybody?
Right. Yeah. Like, even if you don't fully comprehend or like understand what they're going through, like at least be empathetic and like willing to learn and listen. And like, that is a therapist's biggest job. And like, you should just educate yourself and listen to sex workers when they tell you about their feelings and experiences and what they need.
Right. Like, I don't think it's the job of like a couples therapist, for example, when a couple comes in to be like, actually, I don't think you guys should be together. Like, regardless of your feelings about their relationship, like it's your job to hear what the people who are in the relationship think about how they think about it, what they want from it, not for you to tell them, you know, you should just leave.
I know. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Like, that's not what therapists do. Therapists don't give you tell you what to do. So if they're doing that with sex workers, there's like obviously a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everything that everybody's been talking about has been more about like the interpersonal relationship between like the therapist and the sex workers. But also like another thing that people talk to us about in these interviews is just access in general. Yeah. Blunt talks a little bit about this.
Yeah, I think there are myriad barriers to receiving mental health services as a sex worker. I think just the fact that oftentimes a sex worker competent therapist or kink positive therapist don't take health insurance or that so many people are uninsured creates a huge barrier. Therapy can be incredibly expensive. And even if you are insured, finding a provider that's in network that is able to competently provide you with care based on certain life experiences makes the selection very, very small. And the the amount of providers who are willing to work with people on a sliding scale rate or have open slots at that rate can be incredibly difficult.
A sex work hustle doesn't come with insurance.
Yeah. And like when I was listening to, like, this is a barrier that came up a lot, like resources in general, but just mm-hmm. like health insurance. And it was like at first one of those barriers that I was like, okay, duh, like that's an issue for a lot of people.
Right.
But when you think about why that specifically is a huge barrier for sex workers, like I had just never thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it honestly was a moment for me to really consider like the other ways that I just like wasn't considering all aspects of this.
Right.
But like healthcare should be available to everyone, period. But sex right. workers are some of the hardest laborers, like seriously.
Yeah.
And in this system that rewards labor with healthcare access, you'd expect that labor to be rewarded.
Right.
But of course it's not, because of all the stigma and history behind sex work and it not being like a quote unquote like real job, you know, that mm-hmm. has access to healthcare benefits and all that other stuff.
Right. Well, it's also like an underground economy. So like where yeah. would those, like who would pay for healthcare, which means like, I mean, I think that really points to the fact that like there's something really wrong in our country where healthcare is so intimately tied to employment. Like it doesn't yeah. make any sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that means that anyone who's outside of like conventional employment is just like cut off from health insurance unless,
right.
you know, they want to pay huge, huge amounts that, you know, while we have like this trope of like high end sex workers who are like rolling in money, for the most part, sex workers are lower income people who like don't have tons and tons of discretionary income to mm-hmm. pay exorbitant health insurance rates.
Right. And like you said, like underground, like there are a lot of people I feel like that, you know, whether they have like a side hustle or like, but the side hustle is their main hustle,
mm-hmm.
like they don't have access to insurance like that either. So there's so many people that are just left out when you consider this like equation sort of that we have and this like system that we have in like America where it's just like you have to be employed by employed
yeah.
in quotes to
yeah.
like have mm-hmm. access to this. I mean, and it really speaks to like the big takeaway from this, or this like section of clips rather, is that
yeah.
like therapists should offer sliding scale options or like free services if they're able, because I think that there would be so many people that would benefit from it, like sex workers and non-sex workers alike.
Right. Yeah. And also like it points to the fact that this is like a hugely systemic issue. This isn't mm-hmm. just an issue of sex work stigma. It's like part of a larger whole. And one
right.
of the people who did a good job of talking about that was Femi Babylon. So let's turn to her now.
I think that this is definitely part of a larger issue as far as sex workers having access to healthcare, period.
Mm-hmm.
Sex workers tend to be more of us tend to be working class or poor, queer, and, you know, all of these different things. And, you know, lacking in certain resources, like there's like a high proportion of us who are home insecure. And I really think that this is part of a larger issue that is related to healthcare. And mm-hmm. the fact that we really need to focus on unionizing, as you know, as like different types of you know, across different tight lines of sex work or erotic mm-hmm. labor, as in like phone sex operators need to like get it together, and you know, strippers in their areas should unionize, and we should connect across the country after we, you know, connect in our own areas
mm-hmm.
across different professions. Because if we don't unionize, what's going to end up happening is that they're just going to make up the rules for us, and they're going to decide what's safe for us or what we should do and what we deserve. And this is why, like, you know, like all the people who are on some like, we should all be business owners, I want to be an independent contractor, like we need to have protections for workers, like for both independent contractors and those who work in these places, but like a union would definitely help with that.
That clip is so interesting because it like piggybacks off of this issue of like insurance being tied to mm-hmm. employment.
Yeah, like this is definitely like Femi's talking about, just like an institutional and like large scale issue
mm-hmm.
when it comes to just access and lack of resources.
Right.
Like honestly, everything that Femi talks about throughout this whole her whole interview, like I feel like just speaks to the lived realities of sex workers
mm-hmm.
and like how it relates to lived experiences aside from therapy itself.
Right.
And like how truly intersectional and like how many identities like sex workers like encompass, because it's like there's just so many interlocking, like right. marginalized experiences. And
right.
like they just really like talk about that so well.
Yeah, I think so too. And also, like, I think it's interesting that they're like, okay, I mean, one of the things that they're doing here is like going back to like, okay, this is the world that we live in. In the world that we live in, access to healthcare is tied to employment. So what do we need then? Then sex workers right. need to figure out how to unionize. She also talked in other parts of the interview that we didn't pull from, but she talks a little bit about the fact that she would love there to be brothels, or in other words, like a place for sex workers to go and a place of employment to kind of change things, so that if sex worker, you know, if we're going to inhabit this world in which things have to be tied to employment, like how do we then legitimize, I mean, I think sex work is legitimate in any case, but legitimize in the eyes of like the society, sex right. work, so that sex workers have the same protections as everybody else.
Right. And like this whole interview, like if like, I just feel like we all need to go to a commune somewhere, and like this system does not work for a majority of people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this idea of like a commune is interesting, because also like the this system, but also like the emphasis on like the nuclear family within like this system isn't working for people. And, you know, not having childcare, not having all kinds of things that make it really hard. I mean, there is a lot of moms in sex work. And the reason that there's a lot of moms is that there is not like a safety net for moms, and particularly not for single moms, to be able to both work and like take care of their kids. And if their kids have any sort of, you know, special needs, that becomes even harder. And so it just like points to the fact that there's like so many people who are just like trying to make it. And how do we allow sex work to be a place that's like even safer and provides them more?
Right.
You know, Femi and Blunt and Jasmine all talked about what they think that therapists could do in order to provide better care for sex workers. So I think that we should pivot there to leave, you know, something to end on that's maybe helpful, particularly to therapists. I mean, sex workers know what they need from therapists. The problem is that sex workers, so many of them, aren't able to get that. So what would therapists then have to do in order to give better care? So Jasmine, who plays both of these roles as both a therapist and a sex worker, has something to say about that. So let's turn to her.
I think a lot of therapists go into being therapists without doing an inventory of their own sexual shame, as well as their sexual traumas, their own feelings around mental health. I know, you know, for me, it is incredibly difficult to work with someone that is a predator.
Yeah.
I have had to sit with that. I've worked for 14 years as a clinician for the Department of Veteran Affairs and a program manager, and seeing mostly a male-based clientele that would have a lot of predatory behaviors or history attached. And that was something that I had to sit with, and also be very open and honest with my clients when I felt that something was in misalignment with my own personal value set.
If therapists don't do the work of interrogating their own assumptions, and this is something we were talking about earlier in the episode, it's really difficult for them to recognize like why, or to even like notice that they're having like these sort of reactions that are like deleterious toward the therapy.
Yeah. Because if you don't even like taking in, like, regardless of if you're honest about those biases with your client, if you're not taking an inventory of those biases or acknowledging them, they work like subconsciously, like they're still present in the session and you're still imposing that on your client, regardless of if you talk about it or not, because then you're not doing the work. You're not assessing your biases and predispositions, and then you're not filtering that for your client.
Yeah. So I think that that's really important, the way that Jasmine is talking about, like, and also like, I really appreciate that Jasmine was also like honest about the things that are really difficult for her. I think that being like open about that could also open up space for therapists who aren't very comfortable with sex work to figure out why that is, to think about that.
I feel like there's a lot of introspection that could happen. Like, it's a two-way street, you know, like your client shouldn't be the only one having to like work through their stuff in your session. I feel like therapists also experience that too, as Jasmine was saying. Mm-hmm. Like, you can gain a lot by being put in this uncomfortable situation. So if you do have these biases or you do have like shame that you're not working through, it would help you to put yourself in an uncomfortable situation and work with people that you otherwise wouldn't. And like, I say that with a grain of salt, because like there are some situations where that could be like really complicated and like not good for the client. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if you're approaching it with the right intentions, putting yourself in that uncomfortable situation and like seeing a sex working client, for example, when you're not totally like comfortable with that, might help you like humanize sex workers and like be able to like help them.
I'm not a therapist and I'm not trained in therapy, but I am a sex worker. And what I can say is that like, and part of the sex work that I do is like phone sex. So phone sex, you spend a lot of time talking to people about their like sex lives and their fantasies, and it can feel like therapy sessions. And one of the things that like I've thought a lot about is that there were things, particularly when I first started my work, that I was like, that's a little like outside of my comfort zone. And I still like have things that are outside of my comfort zone. But I think like having been confronted with things that I didn't expect to be confronted with, like really did make me like rethink what those things mean. So, I mean, this is going to sound like a strange example, but like when humiliation clients came to me at the beginning, I wasn't comfortable humiliating anyone. It made me feel very weird. Like, I didn't really get it. And then like the longer that I talked to them about like what they were getting out of it, what it meant to them, why they sought that out, the more I was able to like empathize with them and like step into a role that I could understand. And but you have to be like open to doing that. And I think that it takes some personal interrogation. Like, why am I afraid of confrontation? You know, like I have to think about that. Like, what's holding me back from giving this person what they need right now? And I think that therapists and healthcare providers should also be doing that sort of internal work.
We're recording this during, you know, Black History Month. Yeah. And I am a white person, and this month is all about putting myself into uncomfortable situations where I'm learning about, you know, the privilege that I have and the history of racism in this country and how I benefit from that. And unless I'm putting myself in those uncomfortable situations where I'm willing to like analyze what that really means and how other people are affected by that negatively, like you're not going to change as a better person. And I feel like that's the it works the same way for therapists and sex work, like you were saying.
Yeah. So let's turn to Femi Babylon, because she speaks a little bit to that as well.
I think they should state it up front that they care for all these marginalized populations, because all these populations intersect. They should be studying us and different groups of people and putting aside their biases to treat people.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was an answer to the question. I realized that, you know, I could have lined that up better, but that was the answer to the question, like, how can therapists signal that they're open to working with sex workers? And that's when she kind of jumped in with like, they should be upfront about that.
Yeah.
I think actually hearkening back to what you were just saying is like, therapists need to be brave and they need to be able to say, I will like stand with you. As a sex worker or as a Black person or, you know, like whatever it is that is like that person's that's coming to you, like their identity and the things that they're like working with.
Yeah. And I think that that's like part of what this whole like article and like experience has been about. Like, therapists need to know that they can't ignore populations of individuals because like, if we're being honest, it will take a lot of work to undo biases and educate yourself. It won't be easy. And that's partly why I think a lot of people refuse to do that work. But as a healthcare provider, you should be. You should do the hard work because people are depending on that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it's worth noting that like a lot of therapists are situated in bougie towns, you know, like, and cater to more wealthy, like historically have been catering to more like wealthy clients, a lot of whom are paying out of pocket. Like there's kind of cultural jokes about like privileged people like sitting and navel gazing in therapy. You know, I think therapy is really useful. I go to therapy. Like I find it to be really, really, really important. But I think that so long as there are therapists who aren't trying to like outreach beyond like really privileged communities, it's going to not be accessible to so many people.
Right. And like there are so many like marginalized identities that would benefit so much from the services that are cut off to them by therapists, like you said, like only catering to a certain wealthy white, you know, population, where it's like, if you don't push yourself out, like people are not going to get the care that they need. Like, you need to make your services accessible to more people than just who you would hang out with. Like, that's so messed up. You know, like, you should be uncomfortable and you should be helping other people with your services instead of just sticking to what you know.
Right.
Or sticking with what's comfortable to you. Like, you are at your core, like, you're a healthcare provider, like, you're supposed to be serving people. And you're not serving the people who need it most.
Right. And one of the things I think that's really important is that, and we're going to wrap up on this note, is that you can't do that in a vacuum. That one of the things that if you're somebody who has no exposure to sex work, you've never had a sex working friend, you've never you've never sold sex, like you don't have any access to that, like therapists need to be doing the work in order to understand that. And in order to do that, the only way to do that is to interact with sex workers, but that sex workers actually don't owe anything to anybody, and particularly don't need to be giving free lessons to therapists who have way more privilege than sex workers do. So
one of the main things I think is also a takeaway from this article is that therapists have to be doing that work. And like you were saying, like, if you don't know a sex worker or you're, like, you're not in that community already, it might be hard for you, but there are resources out there for therapists to, and I'm not going to say understand, but be able to better understand those experiences or feelings, or be able to better work with like sex working individuals. And there's actually a certification called the Equitable Care Certification.
Oh, neat.
And there's a link to it in our article. And it's a really cool site, and it's a really cool sort of like goal that they're trying to achieve, and basically trains you and like teaches you about like what is sex work and what is like, what do people mean when they say that sex work is work and like sex work is labor and like what is stigma and like how does sex work look differently for people in different like marginalized identities and communities. And I feel like it would be a really good place to be able to get trained and like at least do that work. Because if you're not going to seek it out on your own, like if you're not going to be like, okay, here's some articles that I can read on my own, or like organizing that I can go do, you know, with sex workers, like this is a, I would consider it a very easy step for you to be able to like learn what you need to learn to be able to better serve sex workers.
What are your main like takeaways from doing this project?
Yeah, so I honestly, it made me like want to go more into social work because I feel like this whole like COVID experience has like separated me so much from people and like differences in experiences. And I feel like that's the main reason that I wanted to go into therapy or like social work from the beginning, was just like getting to understand people and better like serve people. And this whole experience has really opened me up and like made me realize that there's so many ways that the system does not help or want to help sex workers. And as a social worker, like as a therapist, you should be doing that work to better serve people. Yeah. And it made me realize, like, I need to do a lot of work, not only with, like, sex working community, but like other cultures. And like Blunt was talking about, I think it was Blunt or was it Emily, cultural competency, like that whole thing. Like, you really need to branch out, and I really, really need to branch out and understand various experiences. If I want to help people and truly help people.
I think that that's really valuable. I thought it was really interesting. I also think it's really important for me, like, you know, I am a sex worker, but like, I'm a white woman, you know, have a certain amount of like educational privilege. And I think it was really important to go through and listen to, you know, hear different sex workers' perspectives on like what has worked for them and what hasn't worked for them, because, you know, it's not, being a sex worker is not like a uniform experience that like everybody that looks the same for everybody who does it. And so figuring out like what's lacking for the community as a whole, I think, is important to be a better community organizer, to be a better advocate for sex workers, because I can't just advocate for sex workers that have a life that looks like mine, you know? And nobody can, like, that, nobody should be doing that. People should be listening to, people should always, I think, be listening to the most marginalized folks, but people should be listening to other people and what they're going through. And it's only in this, I mean, going back to what Femi Babylon was saying, it's only in like starting to collectivize, to work together, that we're going to be able to change anything.
Yeah. And it definitely needs to be, like you were saying, like a bottom-up sort of approach. Everybody needs to be included from the get-go in order to actually make change that would be beneficial for everybody.
Right. Yeah, well, it has been, it's been really great doing this with you.
I know. This has been awesome.
Thank you for joining us for yet another episode of the Peep Show podcast. I'm PJ Sage, and you can find me on Twitter at Peej Sage.
And I'm Jesse Sage, and you can find me on Twitter at sapiotextual or at jessesage.com.
We would like to remind you that we have a Patreon account and would appreciate your support. Please visit patreon.com/peepshowpodcast. Our music is courtesy of Joe Kennedy. The show was produced by Jesse and PJ Sage.
Signing off. Have a great week.